stay tuned. Coming up next is Sex Talk, only on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Fabulous radio listeners, and welcome to yet another episode of Sex Talk, also known as Love Line. Tonight's episode is about control. I've been notified by one of my co-hosts, DJ Lurleen, that our show lacks structure. And so tonight we are going to have a high degree of structure. So if the reason that you haven't been calling in is because the show is too free-flowing, believe me, those days are over. We are now going to embark. Oh, we're already behind schedule. I have to tell you now, the phone numbers to call in, please get your little pencils sharpened and write these down, 621-9728 and 268-9728. I would have told you that 9728 stands for WRCT, but that would be imprecise. Just the digitary code is 268-9728. Tonight's topic is female masturbation. Is that right? And I've got a studio full of people here to share their opinions and their fabulously arousing sexual experiences. And so let's go around the room and let's all introduce ourselves, shall we? I, of course, am DJ Tantric Vulva 5000. And
I am Luke.
Luke.
And I am Paulina, since to talk about this topic, I have to be a woman today.
You're what, Paulina?
Paulina.
Paulina.
I'm DJ Pillow Love.
I'm Charlene.
What?
Yeah, Charlene of the Three Rivers Female Self-Pleasuring Center.
And welcome to you all. Now I'm going to start with you, Charlene, because you are actually a masturbation professional. Now, how long is the Three Rivers Self-Pleasuring Labia Center?
Well, the collective, sometimes we like to call ourselves, because we're fairly actually unstructured as an organization.
Unstructured, well, that's kind of ironic, given the highly structured nature of our own show. And so this operation, this collective,
Well, effectively, one of the things we do is we collect women's experiences, women's self-pleasuring experiences, so that we can share them with other women who may be seeking ways to add a little variety to their ritual. So
this is a therapeutic center?
Definitely therapeutic, but definitely hands-on.
So what problem does your center address? I'm not sure I understand. Are there women out there who are feeling sexually unsatisfied?
Well, I think that's not the problem, really. One of the problems that tends to arise with women and masturbation is that they find fairly early on, some from the age of 7, some from 14, some a little later, a method of masturbating that works for them, that they can use to reach orgasm. But after that, branching out into different techniques tends to be quite difficult and unintuitive. And so sort of extreme cases you'll find are of women who have learned to come to orgasm by squeezing their thighs together without any using any sort of manual stimulation, and then that's the only way that they can do it thereafter. And so for these women, if we can give them sort of concrete descriptions of ways you can do things like touch your clitoris like this, make sure it's lubricated like that, sort of concrete instructions, then that sort of helps them to, you know, find alternatives that might be useful for them.
I mean, do you charge for these classes?
No, absolutely not. No, it's
really. Yeah. So how do you get? What is the
volunteer
support?
Basis? Yeah.
Really, do you get any kind of government funding?
Well, I'm afraid I can't talk about that on the radio. But DJ Pillow Talk here has been both on a volunteer basis and as a client at our.
Yes, that's right. We conducted a clinic on stimulating yourself on public transit. There's that one seat on Pat buses, the one seat that's right above the wheel, and sitting there is, you know, can be quite pleasurable.
Well, that's so helpful because there is so much invaluable time that women spend in public transportation.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
That was a really popular one.
Now, which wheel exactly are we talking about here?
Well, either the left or the right wheel, but
the rear wheel. That's where the engine is, I suppose.
Yeah, so there's a nice sort of, you know, vibration going on.
So if I see an attractive, contented woman sitting sort of at the appropriate spot,
that's right.
I know what she's up to.
Reading between the lines, yep.
Fascinating. And so,
we also did a clinic on, bicycle riding. Various bicycle seats can be pleasurable, and washing machines in the spin cycle.
But these are all sort of indirect techniques. We also do...
Well, these are not the manual stimulation techniques.
Right.
These are the automatic stimulation.
Women have to work up, I think. I mean, they're very tentative to touch themselves at first. So, you know, working with a vehicle or a machine can, you know...
But sometimes even it works from the other direction, too. The women who've learned to do things manually have a little bit of difficulty sort of expanding out to...
Using the wonders
objects.
Of technology sometimes. Mm-hmm. Right, yes.
So I'm fascinated. I mean, what are the social costs of the social benefits of having all these women like constantly in a state of high arousal during the daily task? I mean, aren't they isn't it distracting or possibly dangerous to have bus drivers, you know?
Drivers as well.
Oh, if the drivers were stimulated, I would be worried.
No, but they have those hydraulic seats, so it's fine. Yes.
Well, maybe I misunderstood. So the bus driver is protected from any sort of
I'm sure that's by design.
Stimulating vibrations. Mm-hmm. I see. And so indeed, you have encountered women who are so afraid of self-gratification that they need to be eased into this kind of thing by these kind of ordinary, everyday methods?
Or, I mean, it's at such a subconscious level that it's sort of denial, you know. A lot of people think of masturbation as dirty and, you know, touching yourself as dirty. And so these subtle ways that you can, you know, get yourself off throughout the day.
Some men seem to think of masturbation as a failure of your sexual appeal. Does that happen to women you help also? You know, if you're masturbating, it's because you weren't able to get laid. And excuse me for the expression. Mm-hmm. So.
I don't know if that would be the case. I think one thing we tend to find with some of our clients is that they feel like it's a private thing, and so they'd be reluctant to do it in front of someone.
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, they devalue the orgasms they get from masturbation relative to orgasms that come from sort of sex with a partner. And that may be just from a devaluing of the self. It's hard to say. But I don't think they think of it as a symptom of failure to score.
No, I don't think so. I haven't encountered that opinion.
Well, certainly from the, if I may take the male point of view, I mean, certainly I agree with DJ.
Whatever. Call me Juan, man.
That's certainly the locker room talk, is that, you know, if you're jacking off, you know, it is indeed because you couldn't score. But I'm actually surprised about this kind of self-loathing thing. I mean, you know, here I am, probably the most self-loathing member of the computer science department here at Carnegie Mellon. And, you know, I masturbate, you know, freely and with great joy. It's one of my greatest pleasures in life, and I have no qualms about it at all.
And so does that mean you'd value, if you had a choice, let's say, between sex by yourself and sex with someone else, you'd rate that by yourself on an equal level? Or?
Oh, well, I guess actually I think the way it answers it is that I would go for the variety. I mean, you know, they're both interesting in different ways. I mean, sometimes, I wouldn't rate one as clearly better than the other. I mean, depending, it was like...
So if you had an insatiable partner, you would still masturbate occasionally?
Well, I have an insatiable partner, and so this question,
we have so many,
this question is not actually hypothetical. And so, so, I mean, there are times when it's just... it's so sad, but, you know, the sex with that partner, I won't say it becomes routine, but, you know, it's something that you know, and you still, the man's sexual mind, I think, always craves the novel.
And it's not, I think it's not just that. I think that with masturbation, you also have the real possibility of being extremely selfish, so you can be as slow or as fast as you like. And that's, I think that's one of the great benefits. I mean,
you can get up and pee in the middle if you feel like it, you know, there's no pressure.
Well,
but for men, that's, you have to get up and pee in the middle. You have to go.
Well, actually, it's interesting. I mean, actually, is this true? Is this like a physiological fact of mankind? Because I find that if I don't pee during sex, if I don't interrupt sex and pee, my subsequent orgasm is sort of disappointing.
I do not find that.
Really? I mean, I actually, even if I only have to pee a little bit, I make sure I do, because something happens in my body, and it's clearly not as pleasurable.
I know that in women, the G spot, I don't know the real term for it, that sort of spongy tissue, and when
G
you're...
G spot's the real term.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. When you're aroused...
That's spongy tissue.
Anyway, it expands, and it actually presses on the bladder, so that's why a lot of women feel like they have to pee, but it's not. But they don't actually have to pee. It's a false alarm, because it's your G spot pressing against your bladder. So,
if you're with a woman and she thinks she has to pee, that's a sign that you're actually doing the right thing, I assume, right?
Possibly. And as an added bonus, sometimes when you do actually really have to pee, you can... I had a friend who liked to sit on her foot and gained great pleasure from this. And
sit on her foot?
Yeah, some relationship between the, like, stimulation, G-spot, moving, bumping up against the bladder sort of deal. It's kind of nebulous. I don't know. Worked for her.
I see. So you put the foot, like, all right. I see. So pointing away from you, underneath your posterior, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she never demonstrated for me. So
you're sitting on your foot and walking, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
Okay.
Okay. Uh-huh. Right.
Well, now that we got that cleared up.
And so that's, I mean, the primary thing there is sort of pressure against the vulva and clitoris, or against the bladder, or
against the G-spot.
Against the G-spot.
Yeah.
Really?
I don't understand that at all.
The G-spot is some mysterious patch of flesh inside the vagina,
right? Yeah, but it's internal.
It's inside, right?
Yeah, G-spot orgasms are totally different from...
So how is your foot pushing up against the G-spot?
Yeah, I'm baffled too. Did she do the big toe thing?
Put the whole foot inside?
No, there's no insertion going on. I'm pretty sure of that.
It's like some Chinese gymnast.
Maybe just the balls of the feet, you know, up there in the front.
Yeah. Right. Sort of the angle of it, sort of the knife action.
You know, where the toes join the main part of it. Mm-hmm.
If there are any women out there listening, or non-women listening, who want to share their thoughts with us, please do call us at the studio, 268-WRCT and 621-WRCT.
And since our internet feed is working again...
I'm not sure it is. Is it?
Well, I've been told it is, but I'm no technician. Country code is 1, area code is 412 if you're calling from abroad.
So, DJ Pillow, G.J. Charlene, as director of the Three Rivers Masturbation Institute.
Self-gratification.
Mm-hmm. Well, we use a number of different names, whatever people feel most comfortable with. It's a lot about feeling comfortable, feeling good.
Bumping the Uglies Clinic.
Yeah.
can you tell us a little bit more about the kinds of techniques you teach people?
Certainly. So one of the things that we focus on a lot, there's a few different things we focus on. I mean, obviously there's sort of some general ephemeral concepts like relaxation, and those are things which are difficult to concretely say exactly what to do, but there's something you need to think about. But then also we're quite specific in some areas, like lubrication, for example, is a very important thing.
Lubrication,
yes. Yeah. So a lot of women's masturbation focuses around the clitoris, but this is an extremely sensitive organ, and so one thing we like to tell the women who come to us is to make sure that depending on how they're rubbing the clitoris, then to make sure they've got some lubrication, either taking some of the vaginal fluids or from some sort of...
I have a question for you, actually. I missed that clinic, but I have many friends who are very enamored of masturbating in the bathtub or in the shower.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering how that would work with lubrication, because a lot of lubricants are water-based.
Right. So, no, it's definitely the case that... I mean, commercial lubricants, certainly water-based.
I mean, it sounds like it would be kind of a squeaky affair.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So, I mean, I am one of the very common techniques that people use specifically with showers is the old shower head thing, and then it's a different issue altogether.
Oh, the things that you...
Right, so that you use the spray from the shower head as your source of...
Oh, yes. Handheld shower head.
Yes,
handheld
shower
heads.
Those are nice. They're about 8 inches away from the vulva and sort of spraying on... the clitoris or the vulva generally. It's sort of a nice source of pressure, and you could sort of move it around to sort of move the clitoris around, move things around, and that's very popular. So that's one aspect of the shower bathtub.
And if you have if you have one of these shower massage units, correct me if I'm wrong, you can adjust it to go into pulsing mode.
Slowly increase it into pulsing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pulsing is very popular.
Yeah. But that doesn't give you lubrication.
In
that case, you don't need it because there's no like touching action going on.
Yeah. So I mean, the bigger issue would be if you're sort of moving, say, hand like skin against skin, like moving your hand backwards and forwards against.
But I thought this would be the prologue to something.
It can work by itself.
That's your heterosexual paradigm thinking that
everything is a prologue to what
penetration.
I want. I see.
It's not always that way. I think, just to clarify on this lubricant issue, I mean, you know, the only reason for wire-based lubricants, well, one of the main reasons is for protection, for
I never thought
dental dams or, you know, condoms or whatever. And in the masturbation context, that doesn't matter. So you can use an oil-based lubricant.
I'm under the impression that it can feel messy and be difficult to clean out if you have oil-based lubricants inside the vagina.
That's true.
Well, inside, but not all masturbation needs to focus
on. Certainly not.
Well, but it would be kind of tense-making if you were sitting there masturbating thinking, no, I can't go inside.
Right. Yeah, that's...
Or else. I don't know how
I'm
you
so offended that you think I'm fully heterosexual after our last encounter.
I'm sorry. It was just.
You just want to hurt me.
You were such a selfish lover.
I don't know what I did to you, but you just want to hurt me now. Well, let's just go on with the show, okay? We'll talk later.
It's because you woke up in me feelings I didn't know I had.
Yeah, that sounds really sincere. Please, let's continue talking about masturbation.
So I'm not sure whether we're focusing exclusively on female masturbation for the show or whether we could also talk a little bit more about male masturbation. One thing I understand, and this is not certainly from our clinic, but that I hear from people who've attended our clinics, whose spouses have attended other sorts of masturbation workshops, is that there's actually in the male masturbation arena, and I don't speak from personal or professional experience here, people break up into two camps, those who use lubricants and those who don't. And I have a sneaking feeling that the issue of having or not having a foreskin is somehow relevant here, and I wondered if anyone could comment on that. And actually, this is where I'd really like listeners to call in and
Yeah, the phone numbers. The phone numbers are. What are the phone numbers?
I believe the phone numbers are 621-9728 and 268-9728. If you're on campus, you need merely dial 8WRCT. What could be simpler?
Actually, I had a question about male masturbation, too. I know that the female orgasm is something like a muscular, you know, there's like contractions and, you know, it's this sort of muscle release. And I was wondering what it was in men.
Amen.
Yeah.
With or without lubrication?
Well, in any case.
That's two separate questions.
Yes. So I cannot generalize, but I'm willing to talk about my own experiences, that I am circumcised and I use the lubrication or not depending on my mood and how long I'm planning to go. If it's just a quick wake up in the morning,
wake up in the morning.
Masturbation.
What's up with that?
Oh. Well, that's a whole different topic.
I guess.
You can just do it like drinking a coffee really fast instead of having a cappuccino for 2 hours, you know.
Exactly.
It's also possible to do that.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. If I'm planning to go for hours, then I'll use lubrication because I'll get raw otherwise.
And do you use an oil or a water-based lubricant?
Usually I... it depends on, again, on what my plans are. The oil stays slippery longer, but is more difficult to wash off afterwards than the water-based lube.
The water-based dry up really fast, I noticed.
Can dry up, but you can use a mist or two, re-wet it.
I'm sorry, what?
A mist or two?
A plant mist or two, spray water.
Oh.
And that re-moistens your water-based lubricant.
Yes.
That reactivates. Yes.
But then you have to... You have to stand pretty far away from the plants to use those, so I have to imagine it.
Interesting. So actually, and I find that there is a wide variety of, even on the water-based lube.
There
arena,
is indeed a wide variety.
My current favorite water-based lube, I don't know if WRCT does not recommend this, this water-based lube, but my favorite personal water-based lube is the Falcon brand.
The Falcon brand, and where in Pittsburgh can
I purchase my lube at... the Monroeville Adult Bookstore, which is right next to the Kenny Rogers Roasters, the far side of the Monroeville on the Miracle Mile.
I'm a fan of Astroglide myself, just because that's always in the free samples.
Free samples from where?
At the clinic.
At the clinic. And also, I go dancing at Pegasus Lots a lot, and they pass out a little...
You go dancing where?
Pegasus Lots.
I'd never heard that.
Pegasus.
Interesting.
Yeah. So Astroglide tends to be a fairly thin and relatively light and slippery lube. My lube of choice at the moment is Liquid Silk, which is a bit thicker. and because it doesn't have any glycerin, it doesn't get sticky as it dries.
We're not laughing at you, Luke.
The
I don't know what's going on in the back room.
I think that's...
That's our producer masturbating to orgasm?
I'm not sure exactly.
But he was making a lot of noise.
Yeah. So I believe I can... The problem in this room is that I can tell... Actually, one of the skills I have is I can always tell who's circumcised and who's not. And I believe that everyone in this room is circumcised.
Well, I'm not circumcised.
Well, the men.
Nora.
Well, actually, I don't know. I'm in a nebulous point because, it's a long story that I cannot go on over tonight. But I can appear both ways.
Did you know that men can now restore their foreskins?
Indeed, I did know that because we've talked about that on the show.
Oh, have you?
I actually was planning to restore my own foreskin.
That was the penile implant clinic man.
Oh, Dr. Bill Tillich from Three Rivers. No, it was a later show actually, but I think Bill did touch on that. There are natural ways you can extend your force. You can attempt to sort of regrow that skin by sort of slow stretching over the period of time. Your skin is still very elastic, and so by sort of stretching the skin and taping it down, you can actually encourage it to grow over time, and you get this kind of flap of skin, which is reminiscent of a foreskin.
But the interesting thing is, just speaking of foreskins, actually, and this is something that I was going to touch on because it's an issue in some of our women's masturbation or self-pleasuring clinics, is the fact that the clitoral hood is the direct analogue of the male foreskin, and that's something that we sometimes have to... I mean, women have the clitoral hoods developed to varying degrees. So some women, it's very small and sort of, but some women actually sort of covers the clitoris, and they can actually pull it back during masturbation, and that really affects the sensitivity of the clitoris. That's just the that, and I think in fact the necessity for lubrication in women is related to how large a clitoral hood they have.
So the larger, the more sensitive the clitoris, so the more lubrication you need?
Well, but the larger, if the clitoris covers, if the hood covers the clitoris, then it's possible actually to sort of masturbate over or through without actually retracting it.
I see.
In that way.
Well, so this touches on, I believe it was Dr., I forgot your name.
Pillow Love.
Pillow Love, I apologize. I believe that indeed men who are uncircumcised can masturbate just by manipulating the foreskin itself and using it as kind of a fabulous little masturbation.
That seems like a disadvantage to be so sensitive.
Well,
unless all you want is quick coffees in the morning.
I would guess that, I don't know if it's a disadvantage or not. I mean, it would be nice to actually somehow, you know, experience both worlds, or take a pair of twins and circumcise one.
I have actually met a man who spent the first most of his life, in fact, uncircumcised, and then non-consensually was circumcised. Actually,
non-consensually.
Yes, was given an operation by, he said, a Pakistani doctor, and when he woke up, he had no foreskin.
Oh my God!
Yeah, and so he had actually experienced the before and after of the states, and he said he much preferred having a foreskin. That's only anecdotal evidence, though.
Well, how did this happen? Was he not deep? I mean, was this...
He was being operated on for something completely different, but the doctor said he thought it was a sort of service or...
Guess not.
Yeah.
Wow, that would be... Good.
You know, like you go to Jiffy Lube, and besides getting the lube, you get...
They vacuum.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
I mean, in this country, this is the kind of thing that you would sue your hospital for, like $10 billion.
Yeah, well, he wasn't an American, so he didn't sue. Actually, interestingly, I met him at a naked party, and he wasn't naked. So I think he was still fairly sensitive about
that. A naked party?
Yes.
This sounds like a fascinating digression. Would you tell us more, please?
Well, I mean, it's a fairly simple concept, actually. I mean, the idea is that you have a party, and one of the sort of conditions of entry is that everyone present take off all of their clothing.
And people really come?
And people...
please. How cold.
No, and actually, I think in a successful one, it's a fairly non-sexual situation.
Oh, really? You play volleyball or something?
No, but drinking and...
Are people aroused? Are there erections?
Yeah. No, I think that the fear is so great. Now, maybe
that almost causes me. It's always like... Right, you have to negate all your sex to be naked. I don't want to be naked if I have to negate that.
Well, right, so it's just the same situation as in the university showers, in the locker room. You know, people...
No, but you see some erections there, or at least beginning erections.
Well, as I was suggesting, yes. I believe people should be encouraged to be sexual in the locker room rather than...
Well, I guess there are several different approaches to it, to nakedness, and certainly at least one event I went to like this was definitely a non-sexual situation.
So how is it that I'm not invited to parties like this?
Well, perhaps you haven't held one.
Nor me.
But in any case, it's yeah, I don't know what causes these things to happen, but I guess discussing it on the radio and sort of mentioning to your friends that you think you might like a party where people take off their clothes might be a good step towards actually organizing such a party.
You know, now that you mention it, I recall that I have a friend who's one of her greatest prides is she can get people naked at parties.
Right.
So not naked parties, but yeah. She just has this talent of getting people to take their clothes off.
That's an incredible talent. I mean,
yeah. I'm really scared to go to a party with her, actually.
But she hasn't worked her wonders on you then?
No.
Can you tell us any more details about this talent? Is it one I don't know.
I think
can develop?
I think it's just a combination of alcohol and persuasiveness and.
But what's the purpose? Why do all these people get naked? I mean, is it some way? Is it some.
I can think two different reasons. And so the first one would be as a specific act to separate the concepts of nakedness and sexuality. And to have a situation where a lot of people are naked without it being a sexual situation, some people might see a sort of part of the process of evolving in some way.
Evolving.
Now you
evolving.
Might see that as regressing.
E-V-U-L-D.
Yes, evolving.
I mean, I don't understand. This is a party. This is presumably a place where people are supposed to like have fun.
Yeah.
So what's the point of all the social activism?
Certainly, if you're not naked around your peers on a daily basis, then there's a lot of novelty there. And then there's a sense in which you might break down emotional boundaries, or you might feel like you're not hiding so much.
Oh, I'm saying that's point.
And whereas, but if you might want to divorce that from the sexual situation, because people might feel a little bit self-conscious if it's a specifically sexual situation. Then the other alternative is specifically to make it a sexual situation. And
I could
be married in both of those.
So it's interesting, and I'm actually stunned by this because I was just at the School of Computer Sciences login ball. They have this every year for a little party for the new students, and it was dreadful. It was extremely boring. And I think partially because there were all these barriers between different groups of people who didn't know how to interact.
So had they been naked?
Right. There was some attempt to sort of break the ice by having this kind of trivia contest, which actually was, I think, a laudable experiment, but it kind of failed. And I think had everyone just shed their clothing, it could have been
Everyone is the key word there, though. That's one thing you have to be particular. You cannot have a naked event with some people not naked, because there's a real sense, socially we've been, you know, brought up to think that it's very different to have your clothes on and that you're more vulnerable with your clothes off, so that I think you must make taking off all of your clothing compulsory for entry, and even shoes, surprisingly.
Interesting.
I'd feel pretty stupid if I were naked and had shoes.
What if you're menstruating? Just a practical matter, and you use pads.
I've been only at two of these events, and in all cases, I don't know whether I can't remember whether or not I was menstruating myself. I can imagine sort of tucking away a string or something.
Well, tampons wouldn't show so much, and you wouldn't have to develop your muscles to hold them in place.
So, but you must have naked parties at the clinic fairly often, make people comfortable with their bodies.
No, we don't actually have naked parties at the clinic. The closest the closest we get to those is where we do have a sort of a group session in which we have women examine their vulvas and touch themselves, but actually we don't get them to undress completely. We tend to have them just sort of remove their underpants, pull up their skirts, or pull down their trousers, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Let me just interrupt, I'm sorry, to remind our listeners, if you have questions or comments, please call in 621-WRCT or 268-WRCT. So during these sessions, you have these women in a circle and you're teaching them to...
Just to examine the size of their clitoral hood, for example, to...
Just to demystify, and thereby gain more comfort with it. I actually have a question for you, Charlene. Have you had the experience of going to a gynecologist?
I certainly have.
How does that strike you?
Well, I'm not very happy, I have to say, with the ones here at CMU. But,
I hadn't been the one here.
Another issue, but can you ask a more concrete question?
CMU has staff gynecologists?
I'm a gynecologist. I'm not sure I've been to a specifically trained gynecologist.
Oh, I see.
I've been to.
I was just wondering
gynecological exams.
What you thought of the experience of having a complete stranger examine your vagina and in a completely non-sexual situation.
I guess I haven't ever thought about that as a particularly. Maybe you could. Do you have some sort of context that you asked this question from?
Not really. I don't know why it just came to mind. I think you said something that reminded me of gynecology. I don't know.
So you have problems with this issue?
Well, I don't know. It I guess I was thinking about, I always go see a gynecologist when I go home, and the hospital where I go, or the clinic, is notorious for very long waits. You know, they get you in the examination room, you know, you're all in your little gown and stuff, and then you just wait.
And so, you're on your own?
Are you
masturbating?
Yeah, exactly, and that's what I did.
Oh, are you serious? Yeah.
I mean, we'd love to have you again at the clinic just to talk about that in particular. Actually.
Really? But it was really strange because
you
then...
You masturbated in the waiting room of the...
No, not the waiting room.
You're already with the legs up and everything?
Yes.
You're in the stirrup?
I'm in the stirrup. So it's medical sitting, you know, it's kind of kinky, you know. And then at some point, the knock comes on the door, and someone walks in, and...
And they don't need to lubricate anymore.
Yeah,
they
can
insert their old metal instruments.
I mean, actually, that sounds like... I would... Just hearing what you say, I would suggest that gynecologists have their clients masturbate before inserting the speculum. Because I
was
think
all
that
relaxed
would,
and ready to go.
Yeah, sounds like a great idea.
Did you feel comfortable doing that, may I ask?
Well, no. It was kind of weird just because of the setting, you know, and...
No, but sometimes actually alternative and kinky settings can be an amazing, amazing ingredient for masturbation. So we had one client, for example, who told us that in general she didn't masturbate, but she had been working in a factory with a lot of machinery, loud machinery with moving parts, and there was something about the sort of in and out and up and down motion of the machinery that... several times a week she'd hide herself, you know, in between the rows of machines and masturbate, hoping that engineers weren't passing by. So there's definitely something about, you know, unusual situations and things like that.
Well, DJ Pilotalk, I'd like to get, can I get you to elaborate on this story just a little bit? So there you are, you're on a gurney, you're at the gynecologist, your legs are up in the air in the stirrups, and you're alone. You're, there's like a blanket draped over you or something. Mm-hmm. Right? And so how are you masturbating? Are you like using your hands?
Yeah, the usual.
Are you gripping your thighs together or what?
No, using.
And I mean, is this because you were bored or because you
basically
were kind of kinky? Is this sort of excited about that?
Kind of both.
Were you thinking about like some hot gynecologist entering the room and having sex with you? I mean, was that kind of even gynecological fantasies of any kind?
It's not never really crossed my mind. I don't know. I guess I'd been thinking a lot about it was kind of a personal challenge to see where the most challenging places for me to masturbate are, you know, for instance,
I've been there.
I'd love to hear more about that.
You know, you know, it's just sort of a personal thing I have, trying to, whenever I get in a situation, saying, could I masturbate here?
Airplanes?
You
know,
yeah, some people collect postcards.
Mm-hmm. So I guess it was mostly that drove it to me, and, you know.
Do you think your gynecologist, I mean, being a medical professional, do you think he or she knew that you...
I don't know. I really don't know. I've always seen women gynecologists, which is really strange because... You know, I'm also, you know, clearly a lesbian, and, but I, yes, hard to believe, but I started seeing, when I turned 16, my mother insisted that I started seeing a gynecologist, and she automatically booked me for a female one, so I never really had a say in the matter, and then subsequently I came out, so it was always very awkward.
Very awkward for the gynecologist? Or for
no,
you?
For me. I don't know. It was probably awkward for them, too.
Do you ever have any attractive gynecologists? That you
Yeah.
But so you mean you'd feel more comfortable seeing a male gynecologist then?
No, but but it was always just
So what? I'm not sure I understand what was awkward then.
Confusing the medical exam with the desire for the person whose hand is in your vagina, presumably.
Well, I don't know.
And so did any of these, did you ever flirt with your gynecologist?
No.
Do you flirt with somebody who has their hand in your vagina?
That seems natural to me.
It's gone beyond flirting, I think.
It's actually, I did kind of flirt when they do the breast exams, you know, and you put your arms behind your head and they're just sitting there, like, massaging your breasts. And then, like, I guess this is procedure, you know, like when you go through the little circle and then when you get to the nipple, you kind of squeeze to see if there are any discharges, but I wasn't aware of this. And I'm sitting here talking to this gynecologist and all of a sudden she squeezes my nipple and I was like, ah!
Wow.
So, but I later found out it was
I've
all
seen that part
of the show.
I'm sorry, I'm a guy. What is this going through the circle part?
Oh. So the point of a breast exam is to see if there are any lumps in your breast. So you kind of start at the outer perimeter, I'm not going to demonstrate, and kind of, you know, tiptoe your way through with your fingers and, you know, concentric circles going
okay,
in.
Okay, I think, I understand.
Yeah, see if you find anything.
The sort of breast spiral. And so have you had fantasies while masturbating about your gynecologist?
No.
Interesting.
No.
So you mentioned whether you use your hands or DJ, whatever your name. What's your name, sir?
DJ Volvatron.
Volvatron. Tantric Volva, Volvatron. Ask you whether you use your hands while you were in the, what is the machinery called?
Stirrups.
Wow, it even has a Western name. That's really scary.
I've always been a practicer of the, you know, two-finger shuffle.
Right, but there must be other techniques, right?
Yeah, actually, my name is, I started off, you know, masturbating, you know, purely with pillows and never really knowing what I was doing, but, you know, never touching oneself, you know, for years. It's all about pillow love.
Yeah, I see.
And then I upgraded to, you know, actually.
So this was, does it make a difference what the material is? Gown or cotton in the cover? Or?
Well, I mean, if it was like sandpaper or something, that would be too nice.
That's right, I guess. But, yeah?
I just don't like the thought of sandpaper.
I'm surprised by this because I would, you know, being such an aficionado of masturbation that I am, I can't imagine going through life not doing it just because I didn't know how. I mean, doesn't during these years when you were just using pillows,
It honestly never occurred to me
that you could use your hands or that.
Yeah, I mean, I never thought of myself as a sexual person.
And what sort of age were you when that we're talking
about? Probably since I was 7 until about 13.
Well, that's...
I don't know. I mean...
That's understandable, is it?
You were masturbating at age 7?
Well, with pillows?
I mean, not like actively masturbating to orgasm, but, you know, just sort of, hey, that feels nice.
Interesting. Because I don't think I probably didn't start masturbating until I was older. I actually remember my first orgasm.
But you surely touched your penis before that. Of course,
I don't
start getting erections.
Children are doing all sorts of little kinky, perverted things.
And I remember getting a lot of erections, but not really knowing what it was all about until that fabulous first orgasm.
So how did you learn to masturbate, DJ Volvatron?
Well, actually, as I think I've told the story on the show, I actually my father inadvertently taught me to masturbate because he forgot. See, he's uncircumcised, and I'm circumcised, and I think he forgot that. And he told me one day that it was really important to keep the penis clean. And I guess when you're uncircumcised, there is some kind of little cleansing ritual that you ought to do, I suppose, to keep things all squeaky clean. And so he's like, you know, make sure that you wash your peter carefully when you take a bath. Peter, that was like the kind of hip lingo that he was using. And I was like, sure, okay, Dad, whatever. And so next time I took a bath, I was like, you know, as per his instructions, washing my penis very carefully, and all of a sudden this, like, you know, fabulous and, like, not totally expected thing happened. And, you know, I think I didn't know what it was, but it was weird but cool but frightening all at the same
time. And how old were you then?
I'm trying to figure out. I think, like, 11 or 12, actually.
You know, a lot of what you say resonates with me because I remember being really confused at first because when I knew what an orgasm was, I was expecting it to be, I mean, I knew that it felt nice, but I didn't really know what nice was. You know, I was expecting sort of a feeling of fuzzy warmth and like puppies and kittens, like overwhelming me, you know, just like a Christmas morning sort of feeling. But it's not really. It's not, an orgasm isn't like that. It's hard to wholly call it a pleasurable thing because it's very nebulous. And so for many years, I was really confused as to what it was.
I do ask Santa Claus for orgasms in Christmas mornings, but it doesn't always happen that way.
Yeah. It's so hard to wrap and put under the tree.
So I'd like to remind our listeners to pause their own masturbation for a moment and give us a call at 621-WRCT or 268-WRCT. I should also mention our website, which is always available to you at http://loveline.wrct.com.
And that's spelled C-O-M.
C-O-M.
For my part, I learned to masturbate in eighth grade from reading a book. So
this was a book with instructions on masturbation?
Yes.
It wasn't like Judy Blume or anything?
No, it was The Joy of Sex or something like that.
Really?
So I more or less knew what was happening because I was reading the book and thinking, hey, I can try that out.
Yeah, but did you know the emotional things that you would go through? Did you think it was like a Christmas morning?
Puppies? Was there warmth?
Yeah. I did not know the emotional things. I didn't figure out how to handle the emotional aspects of sex until much, much later, if indeed I have figured that out.
Are there emotional aspects to
it? There are two kinds of people in the world, and they cannot... Those who don't understand that and those who do.
But emotional aspects to masturbation.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, there are people who do it as, you know, you love yourself, you think you're sexy and you want to just celebrate it, you know, but then there are some people who have this weird self-loathing thing going on, and it's kind of a self-destructive act. It's kind of a self-hating act.
Well, I think any actually intense feelings you have, you can kind of intensify by masturbation.
I'm trying to figure out which one of those two people I want to be. I don't think I want to be either one, right? Can I be like, you know?
No, but you could possibly try them in alternation. I mean, I wonder if that's something. Is that something that's fundamental to your character, or can you shape your masturbation session to self-flagellation?
It completely depends on your mood at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, can I just say, like, I'm just totally shocked by all this like book reading. I mean, you know. From a fairly early point, I was experimenting with, like, clothespins and, like, pushing foreign objects up my anus. I mean, I didn't need a book for any of this. You know, I mean,
there was no book at the time.
You know, I didn't need the internet or whatever. I mean, I just don't understand, like, why these powerful feelings that I obviously had, which made me horny on a fairly regular basis, and made, you know, all kinds of otherwise really absurd activities seem appropriate.
Well, you have the scientific mind and the challenge to discover that many people don't.
It's because I was a born scientist.
Well, yeah, in a sense, your curiosity is overwhelming.
Well, I'm the only one here who's described using a book, so maybe I'm unusual in that regard.
But did you prior to that have sort of feelings, nebulous sexual feelings that you didn't know quite how to locate or deal with?
I don't recall. I was interested in girls, certainly.
But you had made the step into the tool making. That
tool making.
What's wrong?
There was tool making. I actually have to.
Maybe you hadn't discovered your pose.
I think we should discuss a little bit more about the tools then.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Please.
So this is when you're 13 or 14 years old, is that
well,
right?
One of the most creative times of life.
So it's hard for me to actually tell because I don't have a very linear memory, but there was all kinds of experimentation. Like, for example, I went through a phase where it was very important for me to try to suck on my own penis. And so I was doing all these kind of...
You know Caravaggio?
I remember trying to do that.
What language
No, it's not Caravaggio. It's Spinoza. No, it's not. No, it cannot be Spinoza. It's some Italian guy from, like, the late 19th century, early 20th, he actually took two ribs out so that he could do that.
Really?
Surgically.
And he succeeded?
Pardon me? Yeah, he surgically had them removed so that he could do that, and, yeah.
Never left the house.
But it couldn't have been Spinoza. But it was something that sounds like Spinoza or Caravaggio or something.
I have successfully done it, but it wasn't very satisfying.
Was that because you were spending too much energy in bending over? Or you're not very good at head jumps?
Well, probably a combination of both, but mostly because it was hard to bend over that far, and I really had to strain my back.
That was my problem, too. If I were a little bit more limber or if I had a bigger penis, it would have been much more satisfying. But
you actually managed to touch lips to head.
Sort of. For strange spurs that as the penis grows and starts approaching your mouth, it also starts to go away. Right?
I'm sorry, what? Does the
penis... Oh, never mind. We're talking about different acrobatics, maybe. So I tried this, too, when I was young, before I realized the futility of the activity. And so, you know, when it wasn't too erect, it was kind of flat in my stomach, and I could try to reach it. But then as it started growing, it also started going away from my stomach. It was terribly frustrating.
Well, different men's penises point at different angles. Mine is fairly flat to my stomach, even when erect.
I see.
But also, can't you just sort of hold it in one direction or another?
Yeah.
But it's the power of blood is... It's tremendous. It just goes whichever way will go, I think.
In my case, there was a great deal of straining, and it was only my single-minded devotion to the scientific.
But we only have 8 minutes left, and I want to hear about more female masturbation techniques.
All right.
Well, is that possible?
We'll save the tools for next time, though.
Well, I think it's important that we talk about like insertion and masturbation because there are women who do and there are women who don't.
I would also appreciate if you talk about vibrators.
Right. So it's funny because those two issues are sort of joined and yet separate in that there are vibrators that you insert and vibrators that you use externally.
Mm-hmm.
So to start with, I guess we talked a little bit about the use of shower heads. Mm-hmm. And that use is, I think, exactly analogous to the use of an external vibrator. Would you say so, DJ Pillow Love?
I don't know. It's different. I mean, it's the feeling from a vibrator is different than the feeling of pulsating water,
right.
I think.
But in any case, you're getting pressure on the clitoris and on the labia, whereas if you use any sort of dildo, carrots, candles,
whatever.
And so on, zucchinis, or sort of dildo-shaped vibrator, then you're getting the extra pressure on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you start to stimulate the G-spot, although you may also, if you're sort of doing an in-out motion, then you could get mm-hmm. the same sort of pressure on the labia, which also sort of pulls on the clitoris, and that can... So I think one of the things is that some people feel that by insertion you can get sort of the best of all possible worlds.
That's true. I don't know, the vibration thing really confused me for a while because I associated it with, like, mowing the lawn and, like, the sort of...
On a Christmas morning, perhaps.
On a Christmas morning. And
with the puppy.
With the, shut up. And this sort of, you know, unpleasant, itchy sensation, using hand tools that, that vibrate. You know, it just doesn't sound like something I'd, want to...
This was too regular? The vibration is too regular?
I guess. Then it won me over, so,
And I mean, the important thing to remember is how popular horse riding is with young girls.
Mm.
And horse riding is sort of the first experience I think a lot of young girls get into, that sort of some sort of just sitting on a horse that has sort of pressure against the whole vulva region, and then the sort of rhythmic riding and pounding against the horse.
Is that what the British royalty women put both of their legs on the other side?
I think that they don't do that today, do they? I think Princess Anne rides astride.
She's always been kind of a...
I'm not familiar with the
rebels within the
royal family. But certainly there was
definitely, in eras less enlightened than our own, there was certainly influence to prevent women from riding astride, I think, precisely because there was fear that they might become attuned to their own sexuality.
That's as opposed to Catherine of Russia, who just did the horse. All right, sorry.
Mm-hmm. So I'm actually curious, since you have a vagina and it's so receptive, I mean, do you ever masturbate by putting something really big in there? I mean, presumably you have the capacity for a fist or something fist-shaped.
I never have. I don't know, the thought... I mean, for a long time, I never put anything in there just because it didn't feel very good.
Hmm.
So, I don't know, it's... I think I'm... If that is a possibility in my future, I'm working up to it.
Fisting is something that's sort of talked about in the lesbian culture.
Although it's not half as
not as
prominent
practiced,
as people think it is.
Is it prominent in the male gay culture?
Well, I mean, so there are certainly people who do sort of anal fisting, but I think it's really extreme because it's a difficult thing, and I think, it's sort of a... I think not many people do it, and it's really hard. It's really easy to sort of damage yourself.
I couldn't even fit a candle through.
Well, we could do some tantric exercises and work on
the anal healing method.
It takes patience, lots of lube, and lots of communication.
With your anus.
I can recommend books on the practice for those who are curious.
And for experimenters and tool makers.
Mm-hmm.
But at least in the female
sense. Thing, I can't imagine, but.
But in the female world, I mean, I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong, that this orifice is much more already capable of that kind of stretching.
Well, and I mean, it's definitely something that, I mean, as sexual arousal increases, the vagina becomes enlarged. And so at the outset, I think you wouldn't want necessarily large objects, but as perhaps you're sort of continuing clitoral or vaginal stimulation, then the sort of vagina walls actually sort of open up a little more. But I think in general it's not, the most sensitive area is this sort of one point on one side of the vagina, and so for the most pleasure it's most important to stimulate right there as opposed to sort of something large which should touch everywhere.
So this is this G-spot again.
The G-spot, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Yes. And the G-spot, I mean, this isn't just some late 70s fad.
Oh,
this is
no, actually a real thing. It's a real thing. And so, I mean, actually, all our listeners who want to have a little look right now, like, do you want me to describe how to find the G-spot?
Oh, please.
Oh, yes, please.
Okay. Okay, so, now...
I can devise a tool that can look at it.
Well, it's much easier than that. So let's suppose that you're going to try and touch your own G-spot.
Mm-hmm.
So what you should do...
So in the bathtub, let's set the scene here.
That's right.
Got some candles lit. There's
candles,
incense burning.
A little bit of oil in the water.
Mmm. Yeah.
It's a nice meal.
Chamomile tea steeping in the...
Puppies and kittens.
Puppies and kittens. Okay, so we take the handheld shower head. Okay, so first of all, you want to spread your legs. Mm-hmm. And take, say, your index finger on your right hand, just for the sake of argument, and insert that in just a little way into your vagina. And then the first thing you'll... So you can imagine now you've got your the back of your hand is facing upwards and your palm is sort of, you know, on your pubic hair here. And then you have your index finger curling around into your vagina.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So now the pad of your index finger, just as you go into the entrance of the vagina, you start to feel a sort of a fleshy muscular area.
Sort of spongy.
Yeah, sort of a spongy muscular area. And as you sort of push your index finger in a little way further, it sort of curves around and up. Your finger actually sort of comes in up towards your stomach, as it were. So it's sort of looped in and up and under. Mm-hmm. As you get past that fleshy area and touch on the wall right there, that's where you'll find the G-spot.
Ta-da!
Isn't that easy?
So that's where the prostate would be in the nail, I suppose.
Yeah. Don't press too hard. Just rub it gently there a little bit.
I don't think so.
Well, I'm not sure where my prostate is, but I always thought it was in that general region, right in front of the anus, and right?
Mm-hmm. Right, well, I mean, I think it's sort of similar, although I don't think there's any sort of physiological or evolutionary reason why they'd be in the same place. I mean, they're not the same organ.
They're not the same organ.
Maybe it's a vestige.
The G-spot is the part of the clitoral body, it projects foot forward in one place and is a clitoris.
Gee, so then the G-spot and the clitoris at the same time is burning the candle at both ends.
If it's fun, go for it.
So you're the book reader, I couldn't tell.
Yeah. It's nice to have someone literate, isn't it? So that's part of the same organ then?
Yes.
Mm. And the prostate then is something completely different.
Yes. The prostate is a repository for semen in the man.
But don't they say that, you know, every organ, male and sexual organ, has a counterpart in the female? And so, I mean, I understand that the clitoris is the corresponds to the head of the penis with the foreskin, then what is the...
Yes, well, so the rest of the clitoral body is the erectile tissue, such as that fills the penis.
Gee.
Mind-blowing, isn't it?
Isn't it incredible?
As far as I can tell, we're out of time. Is that right, DJ?
We can all rush home and try it.
Yeah, being responsible for the atomic clock that we have in the back room, yes, it is time.
I'd like to remind our listeners that this is WRCT Pittsburgh. You've been listening to Sex Talk. This has been a powerfully arousing show. I'd like to thank all of our fabulous co-hosts for showing up, and especially...
I'd like to make a plug for the, what is it called? The Three Rivers... self-pressuring clinic collective. Mm-hmm.
And thank you all for joining us tonight. It's been a most educational experience. And please, callers, listeners, that is, it's been having callers, join us next week for another powerfully arousing show. Thank you.